There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday, the little Friday edition of the show. And a lot to do on today's program. In the 2 hours we got to hang out together. And might be it in Montgomery as well. As we've been talking all week, session might be over by tomorrow. Looks like it will be over by tomorrow, regular session. And then I read an email from my buddy Todd Stacey at the Alabama Daily News, who says it might be over tonight. So here he is, folks. Todd Stacey. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How's it going?
Good. So you're not even tomorrow. It may be tonight.
Yeah, it all depends on how fast things progress. You know, the budgets are really close to being done, and once those pass, which I got to presume is going to be this afternoon, then you're just looking at a couple of bills, a couple of really kind of must-pass bills that they've got to get done. And if those get through, then there'll be no reason to stay around. But that's easier said than done, because the House in particular has been really slow this session. The Democrats, a few Democrats, handful of them, got mad earlier in the session, so they've just been using every procedural motion to slow things down. And so it's kind of maddening for everybody that has bills on the calendar to get passed. So we just don't know. If it could be late tonight, they could actually go past midnight and meet for another legislative day starting at midnight, 12:01. So we just don't know. That they've got it in their back pocket, though. They've got a few days to spare. So if they wanted to adjourn and come back tomorrow, it'd be no big deal.
Okay, let's talk about some of these issues, these must-pass, these things they have to deal with. I mean, number one on your list in the email this morning, and people will talk more about getting this information from the website and definitely the emails, but the budgets, yeah, that's kind of, like, very important.
It's really their primary responsibility is to pass budgets funding state operations for next year. And, of course, you've got the general fund, which funds all the non-education state agencies, public safety, the courts, all the Medicaid, things like that. And then the Education Trust Fund that funds all of the K-12 schools, the community colleges, universities. So two separate budgets. But they're kind of intertwined because there's different funds that they kind of transfer back and forth. And because of that, there are some details they really have to iron out here in the last minute. They actually met in conference committee this morning on the general fund and worked out an agreement. I expect that bill to be finished. It can be finished by the time we go back at 1 o'clock. And the Education Trust Fund, that conference committee is going to meet this afternoon. So they're pretty close to being done with the budgets. And again, that's their one responsibility is you've got to pass the budgets. If you don't do anything else, as long as you fund state operations. And I think we should probably have budgets done by this afternoon.
Okay. Then this story, and it's been interesting. So I mentioned it after reading about this on aldailynews.com and started this discussion of State Board of Education and just asking I thought it was a fair question that I just asked, and some people got it, but I said, hey, do you know who your representative is on the State Board of Education? Left a lot of people saying, nah, I have no idea. At the same time, people said, well, that's not good. And then some other people said, well, you know what? You do have a right of recall, a right of being able to put the people you want in the State Board of Education with having them elected versus appointed. But this is a discussion going on right now, right? Senate President Pro Tem Del Marsh has got this Education Governance Overhaul Bill. Describe this to us. What is being proposed?
That's right. Well, you described it very well. The State Board of Education, if a lot of people don't really pay attention to the State Board of Education, I mean, it's kind of in the weeds, but there's been a lot of dysfunction really for the past, I'd say, 8 years. You know, they don't get along with the legislature. A lot of times they don't get along with the governor, and so there's not, and they don't get along with each other. It's just been a lot of dysfunction. They kind of dropped the ball twice on a superintendent search. I think we've probably got a good one in there right now in Eric Mackey, but it's just been a ton of dysfunction. And Del Marsh, you know, President Pro Tem Del Marsh started looking at this. He's big into education reforms. And they started looking into it and realized that Alabama is one of only, I think, six states that still elects a statewide school board. Most states have, you know, appointed school boards. And so that's what this bill does. It scraps the elected school board and opts for a commission, an education commission, that is appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. So kind of like the president and Congress model. And these people would be, you know, because they're vetted by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, they kind of be vetted a little bit better, and it wouldn't just be a political job. You know, if you're running for a school board, you could run on any kind of political issue and get elected. But this would be, they're trying to make it a more professional board. And so it passed unanimously in the Senate, which it kind of surprised me. It just shows you how frustrated the legislature is with the school board, because so much hasn't gotten done. It's in the House today. It's going to be the first bill up, I think, when they get back. And I expect it to pass. So this is a constitutional amendment. It will go before the voters. It should pass. It will go before the voters in March in that primary. And so we'll get to decide you know, whether or not we want an elected school board or this commission appointed by the governor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like you've pointed out there, I could make, an argument either way. If you want to pick which facts you roll with on one versus the other, I can. The idea of having people in there that aren't just, as I said, you know, hey, this is something that you see a name and you go, I kind of recognize that name more than the others. That's probably somebody for the school board. I mean, I know there are people that do it and do all their due diligence on every place they fill in a Scantron, but that's not everybody. But at the same time, if you have it appointed, then you have, if you have a governor that has ideas that are different than people, you know, when it comes to education, that influence is magnified through that appointment process.
That's right. And look, I'm with you. We should always err on the side of democracy and representative government. But there's a limit to it. If you just go down the ballot on the things that we're expected to vote for, you've got your city council, you've got your mayors, you've got your state representative, you've got your state senator, you've got your member of Congress, you've got senators, U.S. senators. There's just a ton of stuff that we vote for. And school board is on there, too. And you're right. Most people cannot name who their state school board member is. The other part of this is they're trying, as you just mentioned, they're trying to make the governor the responsible, accountable person for education in the state. Right now, if the governor was going to run for re-election and the schools were horrible and they had gone downhill, a governor could realistically say, look, I've been trying, but the school board won't listen to me. You know, right. And that would be a realistic, honest thing for them to say. Under this system, it wouldn't be. You would be absolutely accountable for the progress and success of the education system. I do agree with that part of it. I think I like the governor being held accountable for that. I think it could actually drive some change. If a governor knows, you know, if we're talking about in the future, if a future governor knows that, number one, you better have a plan for education, and number two, if it doesn't work out, you're probably not going to get reelected. I like that accountability. I think it could maybe lead to some good changes.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. In a perfect situation, that would be true. But then I could, but you know, I'm just playing this game here. I'm not saying this would happen, but you'd have a situation where a governor is doing, there's some part of the policy that the governor is pushing that gets the attention, whether it be something like a a gas tax or the lottery or something like that, that they're all behind, and they find something that gets them a lot of support, right? They're all for the lottery, they're all for whatever. And people are supporting that person, and they just pass it. Well, the education thing's not great, but listen, I'm not going to vote this governor out because look at what this economic news, right? I'm going to lead this governor in because I'm scared to change the economy, but I'm not crazy about what happens with the schools.
You're right, and I guess we only have ourselves to blame.
Of course.
You know,
yes.
I won't pull punches. Many times, voters make horrible decisions. And so that's just a fact of the republic that we live in as a nation and our state. I mean, we've gotten it wrong in the past. I won't go over times where I thought the voters got it wrong in Alabama history, but it happens. I just think that, well, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be before the voters. Another part of this bill is it, and should this commission be created, the bill instructs them to begin the process of rewriting the standards, the curricular standards for the state, and they cannot be based on Common Core. And that probably is going to be a pretty popular part of this package.
And it may take out any kind of disagreement about that. Hey, can you hold on a second and come back with us?
Absolutely.
All right, coming back, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We'll talk about how to get this very insightful email in your inbox each morning. Could be the last day of session in Montgomery. Go down the list of things they got to put to bed, as they call it up there. I mean, legislatively, not... Okay, I'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:20, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, rolling on with our buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, with a heck of an email to have in your inbox each weekday morning. So if you want to do that, Todd, how do they get that?
Yeah, the email, it's kind of like a newspaper, Sean. It comes to your inbox every morning, and so I just try to kind of treat it like a newspaper, but it's a lot easier to read. It's really easy to sign up. It's free. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage, and right at the top is a button saying subscribe, so just click that, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. I look forward to folks subscribe. Like I said, it's free of charge, and unsubscribe if you don't like it.
Well, the nice thing is, too, is that you get, you know, when people down here sign up and respond to you, you get some insight down in this neck of the woods, which, you know, Montgomery, I would always argue, needs to hear more from us down here. So
it's always good to be informed, and you're right. So for the past, you know, I guess almost 4 months, we've been covering the legislature, and here we are at either the final day or the final 2 days, however it goes. We'll certainly keep covering it because there's a lot of bills passed that we don't have time to really report on, and so we'll going forward really over the next 2 weeks, we'll be talking about this is what passed, this is what failed, and of course we may be looking at a special session on prisons later this year. So there's always news coming out of Montgomery. Of course, we also cover D.C. Congress is on recess right now. There's not a whole lot of activity up there. But when they go back during the summer, there'll be a lot going on, and we'll be covering Congress as well.
Yeah, and a lot to talk about there. And, you know, you mentioned the special for prisons coming up, and I've asked several legislators that have been on that they think that that's okay. Meaning that, you know, here this letter comes in from DOJ. This is a big deal. We're worried about federal receivership. I said, Are they aware y'all are planning to take up the special, not in June, not in July, but in September or October? They said yes. So that I mean, I just worry that we're, you know, I want to make sure we're crossing all T's, dotting all I's.
That's exactly right, because DOJ comes out with this letter. It was like the second week of the session, I think. And so there were already some prison reform proposals. Senator Cam Ward, he's kind of the big advocate there that draws up some of these things. But if you think about it, we don't even know. The Justice Department is in negotiation with the governor's office and Department of Corrections. They're talking right now. They're trying to figure out right now what is it going to take to fix the situation in the prisons. So we don't even know what that is. And it would be premature to go pass a bunch of bills that maybe might be a good solution to the problem, but we don't know. And so I actually think it's wise to say, all right, let's tap the brakes here. Let's figure out what the solution needs to be and then go pass it instead of, you know, maybe we pass a bill, some reforms here or there and feel good about it, but it didn't actually solve the problem and could actually create more problems if we have to undo it.
All right, as we go down through the list of things they're working on here, speaking of prisons, pardon and paroles, this was a big issue here about, I mean, actually you had the governor step in. It was such a problem.
Yeah, pardons and paroles has kind of been a mess for years. It's almost this like independent agency that doesn't have a lot of accountability to anybody. And that's probably the problem. There were many instances of folks getting paroled early that maybe should not have been on that list, that should not have been eligible for early parole. And there was a tragedy up in North Alabama where one of those parolees, Jimmy O'Neill Spencer, killed three people. That was back in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then they go and find out that he should not have been on the list for parole. He was misclassified as a nonviolent offender when he, of course, was very violent. And it's just a terrible situation. The governor stepped in to put a moratorium on any kind of early paroles for violent people. The attorney general has been really pushing this reform bill that, similar to the education situation, it tries to put the governor as the responsible party for the pardons and parole system. The governor would appoint the director of pardons and paroles. The governor would appoint the board that actually makes the decisions. And so treating it more like a state agency that has to answer to somebody, not just this unelected board. And actually codifying, I find this interesting. They're going to put into law, not just in a handbook somewhere, but put into law exactly when people are eligible for parole. So there's no wiggle room.
Okay.
It passed the House. It's up in the Senate today. I don't know if they're going to get there because there is a lot of controversy. Democrats are not supportive of this. A lot of prisoner advocates are not supportive of this. So it could be controversial. But it's one of those things. Let's say if they do have that special session for prison reform in late September, early October, it could very well go into that package if it doesn't pass today.
You point out one of our local senators, Senator Figures, has more to say about this today. So you think this is going to be maybe something that is done or not done today to be able to bring it back up in special?
That's right. I think they're going to try, and you're right. Ms. Figures was very passionate about this in the committee. In fact, there was kind of some heat. It was kind of a tense situation in her exchange with the Attorney General's office. And look, these are complicated issues. I mean, people, prisoner advocates, you're talking about folks who have either have family members who have served time or they themselves have served time, and when they come to the legislature, they're passionate about this. And so I do expect, if it comes up, I do expect Senator Figures to not just talk about it, but probably filibuster. And then it would be up to the Republicans to decide if they want to, cloture and stop debate, which is always, they have the votes, they have the right to do that. But every time you do that, it's like setting a bomb off in the Senate. It really makes people mad. And so you've got to really pick your battles.
All right. As we'll watch this, of course, like you said, they're probably going to go late night tonight and maybe into tomorrow, but this is about all for regular session. So before we wrap that, where are we? So no lotto. There's not even a commission to study lotto, but there's going to be a commission to study medical marijuana, right? So they didn't pass the bill, but they're going to study it.
That's right. Yeah. Medical marijuana passed the Senate. That was a legalization bill. It passed the Senate. It would have made it illegal in 2021, so there was going to be time to kind of figure things out. The House really didn't like that; they thought it was moving too fast. So yesterday they amended it and said, "Look, well, let's just study this. They're going to set up the commission, set up the cannabis Alabama Cannabis Health Commission or whatever it is, and charge those people with meeting and studying and figuring out if medical marijuana should be, you know, some kind of policy in Alabama, and making recommendations to the legislature. In my mind, I see it as them just kind of pushing the brakes, saying we're not ready to just pass a bill and legalize this right now. A lot of lawmakers feel like they don't really know enough. The bill sponsor, Tim Melson, he knows a lot because he's been studying for years. But your everyday lawmaker, if this is not their issue, they really haven't been studying it.
But this is not brand new. You could look at other states, right? I mean, other states have done this.
That's right. And in fact, some of them were pointing out that other states have had some problems with their laws and maybe went too fast. I'm indifferent. You know, I think there's a lot of positives probably that come from medical marijuana in certain cases. But I can also understand a legislature saying, you know, I'd really like to know more about this issue. And they've had a lot on their plate this year. I mean, they had, you know, if you just take it from gas tax, the abortion bill, a lottery. Goodness, we talked about the lottery for a month. You know, they've had pretty big issues on their plate, to say nothing of the budgets. And so the House just said, look, we're fine moving forward with a commission, and they very well may legalize it next year. Which doesn't really delay the original plan,
right?
But there was no appetite in the House to just pass the bill and legalize it.
All right, there he is, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, and the podcast. Tell folks where they can get that.
That's right. Well, we have an episode this week. We'll have a brand new one next week, kind of running down all the things that happened in the session. It's called In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. And the reason we call it that is, look, we go deep. We don't skim the surface. I like to have guests on like you do, Sean, and just really get answers to things. Whereas, you know, sometimes people don't like to talk about get into the weeds of things. We love it. And so look forward to having a new episode. It's right there on the website, aldailynews.com.
Thank you, man.
All right, Sean, thanks.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1235, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, Thursday style. Glad to have you here. Another great event at Cottage Hill Package. And I've talked about how they do so many different kind of events. I know that I kind of focus on the craft beer events, but listen, that's just me. Wine fans, they have great wine tasting events. They have cigar events, fine liquor events. They have another one of these coming up. Cottage Hill Package is honored and proud to host Alabama's Ardbeg Day, an annual worldwide celebration of Ardbeg Islay single malt scotch whiskey held in conjunction with the Islay Festival of Malt and Music. So here's the deal right now. $100 per ticket, limited to 15. You're going to receive a complimentary bottle of Ardbeg single malt scotch whiskey, which is valued at $120. So you're already $20 ahead. A complimentary Long Islay tropical cocktail from the bar, a catered dinner from the folks at the Meat Boss, a guided tasting of core Ardbeg lineup, their 10-year, and a big listing of names of scotch that I can't even pronounce. I mean, that's how fancy they are. An opportunity also to buy their extremely limited edition Ardbeg Drum. That's their Caribbean rum cast scotch whiskey before it becomes available to the public. So it's a great deal for big scotch fans here. This is going on, and it goes on tomorrow. Once again, you buy your ticket. You buy your ticket for $100. You get a bottle of scotch that's worth $120 just to start off the event. More details on their website and their Facebook page, website cottagehillpackage.com, and just like them on Facebook, go search Cottage Hill Package on Facebook and you'll get the details there, or give them a call at the store to reserve your ticket. You can call today 660-0166, 660-0166. Or just Google them, or go to the Facebook or the website, and you'll get the phone number right there. So check them out. It's Manus Boys, a great, great family, and a great store as well. Corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, Cottage Hill Package. All right, Al, I agree. Al says enjoying Todd Stacey today. Todd he worked in Montgomery, worked in Washington, and he's been in this political world since, gosh, he was in college, and he's well-versed. So thank you, Al. He said, Al goes on to say, the Board of Trustees for the Alabama Community College System is appointed and has worked extremely well. Al, you know, I thought about that in this process, that change that happened there, which the tumult there. But is that where we'll go with the State Board of Education? I can see both sides, and I know we're getting ready to hear probably if this passes, the changes, if the, well, if the constitutional amendment comes up to change the way State Board of Education versus elected, moving it towards appointed, you're going to hear a lot of people arguing on both sides, and probably a lot of commercials running on the station about it. I could absolutely see both sides. The problem is I don't know the every individual that could ever be elected to that position, right? There's no way for me to say, and I don't know every individual who in the future will have the power to appoint people there. And that's what's in question. You know, you can say, you can judge things today and say, I like this or I like that. But if you look forward, which system is best to give the best results for students in Alabama? Which one is it? And it's hard to say. You'd say, okay, direct elections. People get a direct say in their State Board of Education member. Okay, I think that's a very fair argument. At the same time, the reason we have a representative republic is that we elect people to go make decisions for us, right? We don't. That's why I get so tired of hearing people say, you know, we're a democracy, we're a democracy. We're not a democracy. We're not voting on everything. We're a representative republic, you know, democratic system, but we use elected officials to go make those decisions. We elect the best person for the job. They are tasked with making those votes and decisions. If they screw it up, they don't win sometimes. So which system is better? Because you could say, well, in an appointment system, we have, like Todd said, a lot better ability to vet people for that job, make sure they're people that are not just, you know, popular or have name recognition, that they're people that, you know, have the chops to make decisions about education. But then again, you're now using the opinion of that executive branch member making those appointments. So, and people say, well, you just, if you don't like it, you just you don't re-elect the governor. But, you know, if the governor has an economy that's going well, or the governor has some other issue that's got real popular with people, then people will go, well, I don't like what that person's done on appointments for state school board, but you know what, this other stuff, I'm not gonna not vote for them and lose out on this other thing because I am bothered by State Board of Education. So I think there is, like anything worth talking about, there's some nuance to it. As Texter says, maybe once weed passes, everybody will loosen up and pass the lotto. It's when everybody can figure out how to get paid, that's when they'll pass the lotto. It has nothing to do with the, there's no like morality stance against it. It's all money right now. It's all money. And that's why the lottery's not moving forward. Yeah, and the medical marijuana thing is going to be interesting because I am a supporter, and back when Carly and Lenny's Law and all that was discussed for the CBD oil and the oil extracts from marijuana that help children with seizures, and there were members of the legislature that didn't want to vote for it, and I wanted to put a foot in their collective backsides. Same time, medical marijuana helps people. They've shown in studies it helps people. But also, don't be... Here's what so makes for not good conversation out there. Either that medical marijuana is nothing but the devil and it's horrible, or medical marijuana is perfect and there's no issue with it. Both of those are irrational. They are irrational. Medical marijuana helps people in certain cases with certain conditions, lessen suffering, get appetite back. All those things have been proven. Now, there's a whole host of things that we've been told it can do that I'm waiting for more research on that. But on things like getting appetite back for people that are in cancer treatment or glaucoma issues or a handful, there are places where this has been shown to help. It's medicine. People say, well, they get high. You know what? When people take other medicines that are prescribed, they get, air quotes here, high as well. So if somebody has a condition and this is the best substance to help them, then I would argue it's a good thing. At the same time, if you pretend that medical marijuana is not a stepping stone to recreational marijuana, you're not looking at what's happened other places. And you know, it happens a couple different ways. Either it stays around so long as a law that people say, well, it's everywhere, it doesn't matter, vote it through, or the reality is that you have states, not all, but I think a lot of them, where it's de facto recreational legalization. And so I would say, if you're going to do it de facto, just do it. You know how I am about that. I would either you strip or you put pasties on, you're still stripping. I mean, the pasty law, like we talked about this week, is silly to me. It's gambling. Either you gamble or you don't gamble. Okay? Same thing here with the marijuana thing, because they have states like California, and anecdotally, people tell the stories a lot, where they could get a prescription, get a script for medical marijuana for about any condition. I got anxiety. I got a stomach ache. I got a whatever. And they could get the prescription. At that point, basically what you're doing is decriminalizing it, right? I mean, you're letting people get marijuana without saying it's legal recreationally. They're making them jump through a hoop and probably causing more crowds at a physician's office, but you're ostensibly legalizing it. If somebody can come up with some condition, you know, condition A through Z, they can get a script for it and get it. So, it's once again, I think there's an argument to be made. Number one, if there are people that can be helped or suffering, they're suffering, they have a disease that can be helped by medical marijuana, who are we to say they can't have the medicine that would help them best? On the flip side, acting like it's not some stepping stone to legalize recreational marijuana is being blind to what has happened in other states and just the human nature to game the system. I mean, it's so how do you do it? How do you, I mean, look at, because you can argue, look at the prescription drugs we have, right? Look at the issue we've had with opioids. And I'm not saying marijuana is like opioids at all, but look at that situation. People will get prescriptions for legitimate reasons, right? They have but those pills get out into the market, don't they? The same thing would be true with marijuana. Same thing. So you got to decide, which side of the seesaw do you want down more? Which one do you want up more? Is it more important to make sure that it doesn't get into the recreational side and recreational marijuana? Or is it more important to say, well, that's going to happen some, and we realize that, but it's more important for people who have a condition to get this drug that is, for that person, a medicine. All right, coming back after the break, I'm going to grab some calls on this. And also, let me talk about next hour. Next hour, coming up at 1:30, State Auditor Jim Ziegler, who's busy exploring his options for Senate, but at the same time has started to, the Block the Bayway Toll Facebook page, has been on with us talking about what's going on with the tolling. He put a note out and put an email out to me talking about a portion of a new bill that's moving right now in Montgomery, going to the governor's desk for signature, that he says gives this capital investment group, right, the group that's coming in putting the money that would get the toll money, the ability to suspend your driver's license for lack of payment of a toll. This SB, Senate Bill 347, would enable toll companies to suspend driver's licenses and block renewals of car tags for unpaid toll charges. So essentially, it would give a non-government agency, give them the ability to block your license. I mean, if the state, I don't think anybody would question, like, if you get speeding tickets and don't pay them, the state revokes your license. And I don't think you get a lot of pushback there because it's law enforcement, government going through the whole thing. But this could be one of these cases where you have a private entity with the ability to change what's public policy. And I think there's an interesting wrinkle to that. So we'll talk to Jim Ziegler about that coming up at 1:30. It's kind of a little bit of this is like the red light camera stuff. Okay, and then coming up right after the top of the hour news, an event that I used to go to when I was a kid, and maybe some of you did as well. It was a big deal here, and then it went away, and it's been gone for decades, is returning to Mobile. And before you go, oh, I don't want to hear that, you need to hear the story about the World Turkey Calling Championship. It used to go on here in Mobile. It is back the weekend of the 14th, 15th, that Friday and Saturday at the Convention Center. It's an idea that started right here at the Battle House back in 1940 and is now coming back home after about 20 years away. Really cool story. And Kenny Weiss is going to join us at about 1:05 to talk about that. Y'all stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5. Hey, Midday Mobile, we're on the road with the show tomorrow. We are from the studios. I guess it's like a studio. It's also, I mean, it's also like an operating store as well. But Mobile Bay Coins, where the show will come from tomorrow. We'll be doing the show noon to 2. So stop by, say hello, grab some goodies, and check out the big celebration over no sales tax on gold and silver. 1 year since that law changed in Alabama. And to celebrate, you come on in and grab some FM Talk 106.5 goodies and, you know, sit in, hang out, and enjoy yourself noon to 2 tomorrow at Mobile Bay Coins. All right, we'll get to this in a second. I do want to get into the USS John McCain in just a second, but I do want to give you one more heads up here. As where is it? Okay, there it is. 2 o'clock today, so right at the conclusion of this show, memorial service planned for this was planned to go on in Auburn at Auburn Arena for Rod Bramlett. This goes 2 till I don't know when. They know they're saying there's an online stream. If you'll go to auburntigers.com, there'll be an online stream of this. A memorial service planned today. And also an update to that story as we've been talking about the GoFundMe page that was set up for the children of Rod and Paula Bramlett. And it originally, I think the original goal was $250,000. It's $250,000. It's now exceeded that. And it is at $295,809 of their $300,000 goal. This money would go for Shelby and Joshua, the now orphan children of Rod and Paula Bramlett. I said, as earlier in the week, gotten to be friends with Rod over the years, and I'm still pretty darn sad about that dude. One of the nice guys, just one of the, like a guy I dealt with on a weekly basis for radio stuff and talked to him probably once a month, just like a regular nice guy. Like was just, he was every man, you know, even though he was you're doing play-by-play for an SEC football team, you're a big deal, but he didn't act like it, right? Good guy, just good guy. And of course, he and his wife Paula were killed in this car accident in Auburn over the weekend. And right then, the two children, Shelby and Joshua, like that in an instant, don't have a parent left. Shelby, a sophomore at Auburn University, Joshua will be a 10th grader at Auburn High School this fall. So this GoFundMe page was set up to raise money for them, for the children, to help them going forward. And I really love the fact that the state has stepped up like it has. Let's keep this going as well and get it over that $300,000 goal. Think about those two children that now, in an instant, do not have a mom and dad. It's just heartbreaking stuff. But that memorial service at 2 o'clock today, auburntigers.com. I'm sure Paul will talk about it today during the Paul Feinbaum Show. Okay. Let's do the John McCain thing, because this is one of the distractions du jour. Here's Bob Constantini from Westwood One with more on this.
Advanced planners from the military were concerned that the presence of the USS John S. McCain would upset President Trump when he visited an American Navy base in Japan earlier this week. The ship is actually named after the late senator's father, and President Trump is emphasizing attempts to cover up the McCain's name as it was undergoing repairs nearby were news to him.
John McCain, I wasn't a fan, but I would never do a thing like that. Now, somebody did it because they thought I didn't like him. They were well-meaning, I will say. I didn't know anything about it.
The Navy disputes a photo of a tarp covering the ship's name, saying it was part of the repair work and was removed before the president visited. Bob Costantini, the White House.
Okay, so there's the story. It depends on where you want to go, right? How you come at this from a partisan angle, where you take the story. Let's say those on the left that have taken this and run that the president demanded, looks like, in fact, the president didn't demand. And the fact that the president had the word McCain covered up on the ship, Dave, you're saying actually that tarp was not on there when the president arrived. The fact that somebody in the... Now, I'd love to know who. Doesn't look like it's the president, but somebody well-meaning not only didn't have the ship there visible, had, I think, the crew from the McCain on shore leave. They got to be off that day, so I guess they wouldn't have their insignia caps or whatever for the president to see. President has somebody who's there's that's the part that's being spun up by the left that's not true, that the president on the flip side, I don't think you can say it's perfect either, that it's so worrisome. And by the way, Bob Constantini said the ship was actually named for John McCain's father, and the way I understand it, it was actually first named for John McCain's grandfather, an admiral, and they had passed it on down the line, so it like three generations. That the president would have been, you know, I mean, if you put it right behind him or something, it'd have been one thing. But, you know, the idea that somebody in the administration was so worried about the president being so upset by this that they moved ahead of time, this advance team, to get it cleared, is also, it's more the distraction, though. It's where we stand. It's all about distraction. Occasionally it comes up, real policy, real ideas, things being discussed. But what drives most, go to your Facebook feed right now, what drives most of it is just the he said, she said, na-na-na-na-na-na stuff. And that seems to be where water goes, right? It's lowest level, where everybody's comfortable. You know, it's like, Sean, why aren't you talking about so-and-so? Because I think it's not germane to making us a better country, a better republic. I don't. But it is what dominates the discussion out there. So there it is. There's the full discussion about the USS John McCain. I mean, if you want to chime in on it, go ahead. We'll have the text line open for you. 343-0106. All right, coming back next hour. There's the World Turkey Calling Championship is coming back to Mobile, where it started in 1940. Now, we're going to talk about this with Kenny Wise when we come back, about what's happening the 14th and 15th. But the history of this and how it all began relates to the mayor's office, relates to the city, relates to 49 states in the Union. Pretty fascinating. We'll do it next.